Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's Austrian Wine Time Masterclass with Klaus Wittauer, importer for the wines of Anton Bauer, among many other amazing Austrian wines. My name is Antoinette Londejon from Cork and Fork in Washington, D.C. We are a premium wine store founded by a multi-generational flying winemaker originally from Champagne, France. I'd like to say a few words about the producer today, Anton Bauer. Anton represents the fourth generation in his family of viticulturists working on the family estate. After graduating from the Enological Institute in Krems, Anton went on to train in Burgundy, where he worked as an enologist. In 1992, Anton took over the Bauer estate, where he applied the philosophy of continuous cultivation to create the finest quality grapes sourced from healthy soils to make his signature wines. Tonight, Anton is represented by Austrian wine importer Klaus Wittauer, owner of KW Selections. For those joining us live, we'd love to hear from you. Place your questions in the Q&A and we'll get to them time allowing. Klaus, please introduce yourself and this beautiful winery.
Well, thank you, Antoinette, and welcome to another Austrian Wine Time evening session. And actually, Antoinette's dad and I go way back because we opened together the Sutton Place Gourmet, now called Balducci's, and he was opening the store in McLean, and I was opening the store in Reston in 2006. That seems like a long time ago. And we tasted a lot of wines together, not too many Austrians at that time, but I kind of started to go into the Austrian wines. One of the reasons I went to Sutton Place Gourmet is because I was a sommelier. I was working at L'Auberge Francois as a sommelier, and I got the Austrian wine fever by traveling home and not seeing too many Austrian wines in the United States. And Sutton Place kind of was a stepping point. My idea always was to become an importer or a big person with Austrian wines and sell Austrian wines and actually make a living off Austrian wines. And that's when I met Anton Bauer in the year 2000, 21 years ago. So let me go into my little presentation here and see if we can get this on up here. It's always, you know, you do the testing. So I hope everything is there. So here's Anton Bauer. And I always have to speak for him because he thinks that the wine does all the talking and he is only the winemaker. So I apologize that he's not with us today. But, you know, it's busy time. The little shoots are just coming up and Anton has to watch them to make sure the 2021 vintage is perfect for us. So as Antoinette said, KW Selection is kind of my company, my selection of different Austrian wine producers, started with Anton Bauer in the year 2000. First it was just his wines, and then Anton had the idea of taking me away from the French wines I used to sell. I used to have the Diageo program, and when I left Sutton Place Gourmet, I sold to L'Auberge and to the Inle Washington and to all the places. But Anton wanted me to focus on the Austrian wine. You see us down here when we were still young and beautiful and thin. So the tasting order today, I already poured my first glass. So please, if you have wines and samples, pour yourself a glass of the Ried Gemurk. This is our classic Grüner Veltliner. And then we're skipping a couple Grüners and we're going to the top, Anton's Grand Reserve. And actually, I see Nick in the background. Nick, hello, how are you doing? You're on mute, but I'm going to bring you in a couple times in this presentation.
I'm just happy to be here. Any way I can help you out, Klaus? It's always a pleasure to get to drink your wines.
Thanks, Nick. I think the Grand Reserve was one of those wines I convinced you to sell some Austrian wines in your store when you used to be a retailer too. And then actually we have three red wines. We are talking about white wine country, white wine region, but one of the main reasons I hooked up with Anton Bauer was because he also always made some great red wines, and we're doing Zweigelt and then two of his Pinot Noirs. So I always have to start out these little presentations that, you know, we are not in Australia. This is Austria, the little tiny country in the middle of Europe, kind of east of Paris. I always like to do my wine dinners and call them east of Paris and not Austria, because people always associate Austria a little bit with German wines. And hopefully you've been watching some of these fabulous classes Antoinette is putting together for us here to show us great Austrian producers. And here's a little spiel, which, oops, my glasses are breaking here in the back. What got me excited about Austrian wines, and not just because I am Austrian myself, and maybe Nick and Antoinette can attest to that, that we in the wine business, in order to bring you good wines, we taste through a lot of shitty wines. And when it comes to Austria, and when I started to go to Austria and taste wines in Austria, there was no really bad wines. Yes, of course, there's inexpensive and wines you drink every day. But when you go to the top producers and to their top wines, they were just all exceptional, unique, wonderful. And there's a one little, you know, we are a small country. We are producing about 250 million liters of wine a year. But we also drink 250 million liters in Austria. So we have a good consumption of wines, and people in Austria really drink Austrian wines. When it comes to white wine, almost 90% of white wines consumed in Austria are Austrian wines. And in red wines, we are a little bit more flexible. We do vacation in Italy or Spain or even France. You know, we're still going to Marie Antoinette. We still have a little something with the French people sometimes. But the wines are just, that's what got me involved with Austrian wines when I wanted to get into that, because it's true character and personality, because it's only about 1% of the world wine production. So we don't have any big corporations. We only have family-owned businesses. And sometimes there's two and three generations working in the family. And that, you know, it's always about the quality. It's not about so much the EBITDA, the bottom of the line, you know, how much you bring home. It's having fun, bringing the best product from your land, from the grapes which are grown in your vineyards. And that's really got me into Austrian wines. And then being a sommelier, it's of course the food pairing. I mean, Austrian wines are just absolutely, we have a unique climate in Austria, and we have warm days. We are much further south than Germany, but we also have the cool nights, and those temperature differences between day and night create these balanced wines. There's never stress. These wines are just perfectly harmony. And that's what really got me into Austrian wine, is the harmony. So here you see the little map again where Austria is located. Germany is up here. And really, if you look over to the west, Bonn, Burgundy, and Champagne, Austria is kind of right in between those two, 47 and 48 latitude, and very east of Europe, of the wine growing regions. And if you come to the United States, we would be right around the Long Island, Finger Lakes, and Oregon, Washington. So further south, close to Italy, I mean, Austrian wines, for Friuli, you have to understand that all this part down here, World War I kind of changed a few things, but there used to be an Austrian-Hungarian Empire, and a lot of the northern part of Italy used to belong to Austria. So you might Wiener Schnitzel, you go to an Italian restaurant, it's called Veal Milanese. Basically, it's the same thing, but of course the Italians pronounce it a bit more sexy than our German language. But Grüner Veltliner and Riesling is in the Danube Valley. So the Danube is the second longest river in Europe and kind of starts in Germany and then comes into Austria near Salzburg, which is my hometown where I was born and went to school. And then it kind of goes through Linz and comes into the Wachau Valley and then goes into Vienna, through Vienna, Carnuntum, and leaves Austria near Bratislava and then goes down into the Black Sea. So the Danube Valley is kind of where we grow most of the wines, and that area is also called Niederösterreich. And that goes back to the Roman times. Austrich, Österreich, is the province, what it was called, and Nieder means the lower part. So this is the lower part of the Danube. And that's very much our big white wine region of Austria, where we grow most of the white wines up here. We go to the forest, Czech border, and it gets a little bit too cold to grow wine. And then on the western part, of course, it's all mountains. Those are the Alps, and that's where I am from. And you don't see a whole lot of vineyards. It's all ski slopes we have there. So this is the wine region. And here you see a little bit more detailed map where the Danube goes. In 2 days on Wednesday, I'm going to be talking about Martin Mittelbach, one of the oldest wineries right here in Dürnstein. When I was a little boy in 1002, the German king gave this property near Krems to a monastery, which is south of Munich, the Tegernseerhof. And in 1176, they built this winery. So on Wednesday, if you want to come in, we talk about that. And then tomorrow we are in the Steininger, in the Kamptal. And today it's all about Wagram in this little village of Feuersbrunn, where Anton Bauer is located. So Wagram goes all the way from Feuersbrunn near Krems to Vienna, to Klosterneuburg. And that's kind of the Wagram is the Wogen. In former times, this was the coastline. We had a big sea, the Pannonian Sea there, and the Wagram basically is a coastline. And then for the French people, it's kind of an important area too, because it was the last victory Napoleon had before he went on to Russia on the Wagram. So going into our first wine, Grüne Veltliner. This is the flagship of Austria. Of course, 30% of the vineyards in Austria are planted to Grüne Veltliner, and Riesling is only 4%. Kind of totally opposite grapes, but after World War II, when kind of the Russian and Austrian wine had to restarted itself, because it goes way back to the Romans and even Celts, then we had two world wars, but after World War II, the wineries had to replant, of course, because the war destroyed most of the vineyards. And Grüne Veltliner was one of these grapes, which you see the bunch here. It's a fairly high yielding grape, and it's very safe for the cool climate we have in Austria, and especially like Wagram and Kremstal and Kamptal, the Loess, that sandy crystal sand, which was blown after the ice time from the Alps, was deposited there. And that is the home for Grüne Veltliner, where it really can grow vigorously. And we had a culture post-World War where it was not so much about quality, it was about quantity. And then higher up on the hillsides, where you had the older deposits of the rocks from the old sea or the wild Danube River, where Grüne Veltliner doesn't grow, they planted Riesling, because Riesling basically grows where nothing else grows. That's when you put Riesling in, and that's when you really make some of the top Rieslings in the world, which I think we have in Austria. So that's the reason why we have all these Grüne Veltliners in Austria. But a lot of things have changed since. And if you watch that little seminar Antoinette put on one of the sessions, you hear a little bit more about our changes in the wine industry in Austria. But Grüne Veltliner, like I mentioned, the most grown grape, 30% about, and it's like many grapes, the mother grape is Tramina. Tramina comes from Northern Italy, the Trentino area, and then it was crossed, a wild crossing with a grape. We don't really know which grape it was, but it was found in St. Georgen in Burgenland. And this is then the variety which we plant all over Austria. And one of the reasons it becomes so famous now, especially in the restaurant scene with sommeliers, is the food pairing. Grüne Veltliner goes with fried food. Of course, here we have the Wiener Schnitzel. Right now we have the asparagus season, and Grüne Veltliner is one of these wines perfect with all kinds of different vegetables, but also Asian food, sushi, because it's so aromatic and flavorful. So let's go right in. Nick, you want to tell us something about the Gmürk, or you want me to talk about it?
It's just an amazing wine. You know, this is kind of what I love about Gruner is that you can narrow down to just certain wonderful flavors that the grape presents itself. It's the most flexible and versatile when it comes to displaying flavors due to the soil type, due to the altitude, and due to the weather. It's just always got so much character. And I think that's what I love about Anton's versions of this. The fact that he does, you know, anywhere from 4 to 6, you know, almost guaranteed every single year, and they all taste different. This one, you know, has that, I think since he renamed it Gemurk, has gotten a distinctive character, and it's just, it's so laser focused. It keeps getting better and better and better every single time I drink it.
Yeah, this is kind of our bread and butter. This is kind of the wine which got me to Anton Bauer at the wine fair in Vienna in the year 2000. I met Tony at the Vivinum after tasting a lot of the creme de la creme wines in the Wachau room. I came to his table, and actually what I wanted was some water because it was a very hot, it was June and there's no air condition in the palace where they did the tasting. But of course I was polite and I didn't want to just go to the table and ask him for some water. So I tasted through all his wines, and the first wine was the Ried Gemurk. And at those time, when we first started, this wine came from 3 different vineyards right here where his cellar, old cellar is. And this area is called Gemurk, which means neighboring. It's bordering to the next village in Fels. So there's different sites. It's on the flat area of the Hengstberg. And when you go further up on the hillside, which is the Rosenberg and the Spiegel vineyard, but this is kind of the bottom of the hill. And I just love that style of Grüner Veltliner because it's a bit more classic, with really that citrus, grapefruity, but not as aggressive as New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs. You still have that, but it's not that green Grüner Veltliner, which you can get sometimes in an inexpensive Grüner Veltliner. So it has still some beautiful ripeness. We're trying always to keep it at a 12.5% alcohol wine because the flat vineyards don't get the same sun exposure as you would get on the hillside. So when the Rosenberg, the sun hits the grapes a different way than kind of in the flat vineyards. Plus, we also have the loam and a little bit of gravel underneath, but mixed in with the lers. So the grapes don't get quite as ripe. We harvest them a little bit earlier. Of course, at those times when I first tasted the wine, it was very young wines. But now this vineyard actually has come, we have 25-year-old wines now on an average. Tony completely changed to sustainable farming, does very much organic production, but he doesn't want to have an inspector coming in to inspect his ladders. And there's too many inspectors to be certified. That's Tony's, what he says. I'm sure he will change his mind down the road because we're all going in that direction. But he uses that. He has his own manure from a horse farm nearby, and it works organic in the vineyard and all this. And actually what he did, he also made the wines a little bit older by cutting off the roots, actually keeping the roots inside and grafting on new vines on the bottom. So instead of completely ripping out the vineyards, he just cut them on the bottom and then 6 or 7 new sprigs coming up. And then he used the best one to bring it up. So he still have this old root system there where the vines go way, way down to bring out all the flavors into the grapes. So essentially an old vine, but a little bit newer and a bit more controlled now. And you know, I just love this aromatic. It's just a perfect balance. Acidity, you know, 19 was a very warm vintage. So we have a little bit lower acidity here, but it's balanced with only 2.1 gram sugar. So it finishes dry, but it has that just beautiful fresh, and you can easily drink a whole bottle of this wine and, you know, you still feel okay. Maybe move on to the next.
I think you bring up a great point though, Klaus. This wine, it's, you know, it's 12.5% alcohol, you know, 4 grams plus of acidity and just that little bit of sugar. It doesn't drink sweet. It drinks, like you said, just totally balanced. So whether you're drinking it on its own, whether you're having it with food, this is just one of those wines that can do everything and really exemplifies why Gruner has grown in popularity, because they just have an ability to flex to your mood, to your food, to whatever it may be. And Anton does that so well, as we're going to see in the upcoming wines too.
Yeah. So here you have a little picture of the vineyard. Of course, it's all cover crop, you know, we're working the organic way. We're doing this new Burgundy kind of system in Austria. We're establishing single vineyard appellations. You have to understand Austria is kind of, I always call it the new kid in the old world. So we are kind of just now starting to establish ourselves for the last 20 years to become a serious contender in the top quality wine with a lot of different single vineyards. And right here, we are in the Gmirk, what is old winery is located. And this is kind of our vineyard where we're actually going to end up today, because some of his best Pinot Noir comes also from this vineyard Gmirk, which he was planted when he was not even 20 years old. So here's again, used to be called Gmirk, but now we're going into the single vineyard appellation. So we're making a little bit less wine of this wine. I used to sell this for $7.99 when I first started. It was a long time ago. I wish we could just charge $7.99, but then Tony would probably have horses instead of a tractor. So horses are expensive too, but he would have to walk. So we are moving up on the hillside here. You see a little picture of the terraces, because with the Loess, you can easily go in and make little bigger terraces, but where you can still have bigger rolls in between, where you can still work with your tractor. And here's a picture into the sunrise from the top of the Rosenberg down into where his old winery is located. And we're moving in a couple levels up in wine. There's, we had like Spiegel is also a wine Tony produces, which is all the way on the top of the hill from a vineyard, which has actually rock deposits. It almost looks like Chateauneuf-du-Pape on top of the hill. When the Danube was flowing wild, it kind of dropped all kind of big river rocks. It looks like a big truck just dumped some rocks in this vineyard. It's amazing. And that's where Grüner Veltliner gets a bit leaner. It's higher up on the hill. It's almost a little saltiness you get in these Veltliners when you come from those vineyards, because of the rocks and also the wind. The grapes have to work a little harder, and you have less grapes on the vine. And then Tony's kind of creme de la creme, or grand cru, is actually a combination of the three different vineyards. So he uses a little bit from the Gmirk, some of the later harvest, older wines for the acidity, for the freshness. And then he uses from the older vineyards of the Rosenberg vineyard for the luscious, voluptuous, creamy texture, Burgundian wild, and then also blends in a little bit of the Spiegel vineyard to get to this beautiful, what he calls the Grand Reserve Grüner Veltliner. So here, our tasting of this wine is much, you see already in the color, this wine is a little more yellow. This wine gets a little bit, much more lee contact. So harvested number one later in the season, riper. We're using older vineyards, 30 to 40 year old vines here, basically. We have a different soil types, you know, from loess to gravel, to a little bit loam. And actually he's just started to blend in a little bit of the Gmirk into that because of climate change. And he needed that little bit freshness to get into this wine. Over the years, Tony has experienced a whole lot with this wine. It used to be at one point in 100% new oak barrels. Then he changed to just stainless steel again. And now very much a combination of stainless steel fermentation, where he actually developed a special tank, which he developed out of the egg, which has a special shape. So there's a constant flow inside of during the fermentation going on. So the lees get constantly contacted. There's always a movement. So he doesn't have to punch down, or he doesn't have to pump over to get, but it's a perfect extraction of the lees. And then he ages the wine in Hungarian oak barrels, but large oak barrels. So it's neutral. So technically you sense a little bit oak, but it's more the lees contact, and it's the richness. And this is kind of a Grüner Veltliner we always drink way too young. We kind of have to learn from the French and start to release these wines a little bit later. 2018 vintage is our current year. I wish, you know, we could wait another 2 or 3 years for this wine, but it's delicious now. But don't be afraid to put this wine in your cellar. And even if in 5 years or 10 years, if you still have a bottle of this wine, it will be magnificent. It just ages amazingly. So here again, you see Tony. He understands every single word I say to in English when I talk to people, but he never speaks to us because he says the wine is supposed to talk. But here in the back, you see the oak barrels where we're aging them now. So these are Hungarian oak barrels, and they're neutral, so they don't give any flavor, but you got the micro oxidation, you got to give that wine already a little contact to the air. And that's why this wine can go for a long time. But it's clear, it's clean, it's clear. So nothing is going to be able to happen to this wine. And that's, you know, hopefully down the road, we can do a little blind tasting, a couple against a little Poligny Montrachet or Chassagne Montrachet, and have a little Austrian Grüner Veltliner next to it. So I want to take this opportunity and take you a little bit back and tell you a little bit more about Anton Bauer and how we met 21 years ago. I mentioned the Vivinum, and Anton kind of took over a small winery from his father, who passed away when he was quite young. So at 21, he had to become an owner of a winery, and he did not want to continue like his father and grandfather did. So he kind of closed his doors, because at those times in the Wagram, people kind of what we call abhof. So people from Vienna or Germany or Linz come out to the winery, buy the wines at the farmer, and then bring them home. And it's all about cents. You know, if the neighbor's wine is 25 cents less expensive, those people go to your neighbor. And Tony said, this is not what I want to do. He experienced a little culture in Krems, where he actually, he worked with Mallet a little bit, and did an internship and worked at with the monks up in Gobel in the Krems area, and also Burgundy. And he saw, and I go into this a little bit more when I talk about the Pinot Noir, but he invested right away in some technology, and also his idea was right away that the Feuersbrunn area is not just a white wine country. He actually wanted to make red wine, because when he went to Burgundy, when he was 15 years old, he came back with the one thing he saw in France, that the French people put the red wine in a cellar, and then they age it for 5 years, and then they charge 10 times as much. So he came back from Burgundy and told this to his dad, and his dad said, yeah, that is not what we do, because we are a white wine country, and you grow the grapes, you bottle it in the spring after the harvest, you have the summer to sell it, and your cellar is supposed to be empty by the time the new harvest comes. That's kind of the cycle of a classic Austrian white wine maker. But his dad was smart by not trying to tell his teenage son something he's going to buck against anyway. So he said, hey, take this vineyard over there in the Gmirk area and do whatever you want. And that's when Tony planted his first Pinot Noir vineyard when he was only 16 years old. And then when he started, after 2 years, Tony already came out with his first red wine blend, kind of a cuvée. And in that area, at that time, this was called Donauland. So the Danube Valley was a whole area from Krems all the way to Bratislava. That was one wine region. And Tony actually said, oh, I'm going to make some red wine. And then in 2007, he actually made the first reserve, really top end red wine, where he actually brought in some international red grapes as well, like Cabernet and Merlot. and planted that in Feuersbrunn. Then in 2000, one mistake Tony made, he met me. Vivinum, Tony and I got together. And that's when we started working a little bit together. He came to the US, and that's when we were still young. And, you know, we could drink and eat and sell and travel. I don't know how we did all these things, what we did, but we did it. 2007, Tony became a Falstaff winner of a Cabernet Sauvignon. The people in Burgenland couldn't believe that there was Cabernet in Feuersbrunn, but Anton made the best Cabernet. And in 2017, he became winemaker of the year. So here you see a little picture of Anton and me when we first started. Damn, that was a long time ago. And now a fourth generation winemaker from a little small, 8 acres to 30 hectares, focusing, of course, Grüner Veltliner, big single vineyard, great wines, also makes delicious Riesling, but one of the top red wine producers in Austria. And I think that's also why he was voted winemaker of the year, is because of what he has in the cellar and what's still to come. There's lots of things to come. So here's a picture kind of when he departed from me, because now he's a big star. And now it's a little bit more difficult for me to talk to Anton Bauer. When you see the picture earlier, I was still able to draw wine out of his barrels. But in 2011, he built this beautiful facility in Feuersbrunn. It's kind of just a warehouse, but inside is what's happening. So it's the state of the art, air conditioned, sorting, the optical sorting machine, all temperature controlled stainless steel tanks. Our goal is eventually to build another hall next to it, so to separate the red wine and the white wine completely. But of course, the big open wooden fermenters for all the red wines and then the barrels. But at the end of the day, it's all about the soil. Who cares? You only can keep or make the best possible wine from the grapes you get in, but you cannot make it better. It's a little bit like a chef, you know. It's always easy to watch those cooking shows and, you know, put a little salt, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and it tastes delicious. And you try to do it at home, and it doesn't taste as good. Well, it's because the chef has the better connections with the produce and with the meat purveyor, and he gets the fresher fish than you get at the store. So that's pretty much with the grapes too. And one of the reasons why in Austria we make so many different grape varieties in just one hill or one village is because when the continents split 100 million years ago, we were an ocean here, and then the continents kind of split, and there's so many different soil types. Just from 100 yards to the next is completely different than down here. So you got the bottom is the Gmirk. So the Gmirk area is kind of the bottom here, which loam and little gravel. And then on the hillside, we have the Loess, that fine crystal sand. It's all very deep Loess. And then on top of the hill, we actually have the little rocks on top, where underneath we have the Loess. And then actually on the Feuersbrunn, where the village is located, we have completely rocks like you find in the Wachau Valley. So actually we have some Rieslings down here, and even Syrah, there's a little vineyard of Syrah and some Blaufränkisch. We have different sites of Blaufränkisch to get the different soil types. And then at the end of the day, it's always about where you plant, what you plant. And Tony was one of the first people to climate change. Hail is a big thing. We also have frost problems, but on the hillside vineyards where we have the top vineyards, the frost is not such a big problem, except the bottom vineyard where it's flat. But the nets are very much for the hail, but then also for the little deer, the young shoots. They like to eat, nibble on those grapes. We are close to the forest. So we find the nets being very helpful. So Anton was one of the first wineries to completely cover his entire vineyards with those nets. Don't look as nice, but we are getting used to them. And again, at the end of the day, it's all about the grapes we bring in at the harvest time. So a lot thing has happened in the last 20, 30 years. This is the old winery where he used to make the wines, our old little press. And then you in Austria, when you get grow, you can dig underneath here. This is all cellar where you can, every year when you need a little bit more room, you can just expand your cellar into the hillside because it's all loose, that sand. So it's very easy. So it looks deceiving. This is a very small building, but underneath there's lots of cellars. And Antoinette, next time you come, there's your helicopter landing spot right here. You can land with your helicopter. This is our little tasting room up here, or used to be. Now we have it down here. But I remember many nights when we walked in here at sunset, and then we came back out here when the sun came up, and we were tasting through every single barrel Anton used to make. And we were still fit in the morning. I don't know how we did it. So let's move in. I know I talk too much. We have three wines to go. Let's go to red wine. Zweigelt. So Zweigelt is a grape which pretty much is an Austrian grape like Grüner Veltliner. This is actually even more Austrian because Zweigelt was developed by Professor Zweigelt in 1922. An original name was Blauburger. So Zweigelt, Blauer Zweigelt or Rotburger, because Kloster Neuburg is where Professor Zweigelt was doing his research and teaching. And he was in 1922, the Austrian government commissioned him to develop a grape variety which is safe, is high yielding. If you look at the grape here, like Grüner Veltliner, those times it was not about quality, it was about quantity. So again, a very big bunch, lots of grapes. And he took the Blaufränkisch grape, which is the real from the Charlemagne time. It's that Eastern European Cabernet Sauvignon, if you want to put it that way. It's our biggest luscious, but very late ripening grape. So it doesn't get ripe in every place of Austria every year. And he crossed that grape with St. Laurent, which is a Pinot Noir related grape. So it's an early ripening grape. And it's a little bit earthy, a little bit the diva like Pinot Noir in the vineyard. But by crossing the two, he created a grape variety, which now is the second most planted grape in Austria with 14% of the vineyards. And it gets ripe in almost every place of Austria and makes a very easy, you know, in France, you got south of Burgundy, you got a region called Beaujolais, and there's the Gamay grape, and it's a little similar. No tannins, a lot of fruit forward, soft, easy wine. And, you know, Beaujolais has a bad name in America, unfortunately, but there's some really magnificent Cru Beaujolais. And then in Italy, also another variety you can compare Zweigelt to a little bit is Dolcetta and Barbera. And I think Nick can tell us a little bit of a story when he worked with a master sommelier at the market and you guys went to lunch. So while I sip on this Zweigelt, Nick, I'm going to put you back on and let you tell us the story.
You can be honest and just tell everybody you love drinking Zweigelt as much as everyone else in the world. We had the fortunate pleasure of having Luca Martini come to the United States, who was voted one of the number one somms in the U.S., the number one somm in all of Italy. And he was employed by that okay kind of stylish family known as the Ferragamos to promote the Ferragamo winery. And we had taken him up to a local restaurant where he hit it off really well with the owner, and the owner happened to ask him if I could get you something to eat, if Nick had been so kind as to let you have lunch. And of course, after like 8 hours of drinking and working, I hadn't. And we had an event that night. And he said, you know, I could really go for a pizza if you would make one for me. And while the owner went to make a pizza, I quite simply asked Luca, do you feel like drinking some of your wine or would you care for something else? Because I have a lot of stuff in my car and I had just come from picking up the brand new vintage at that time of this particular Zweigelt. And when I told Luca I had Zweigelt, he said, listen, don't tell anyone, but that's my favorite pizza wine. Absolutely, it is fantastic. Go get a bottle. And then we ended up drinking two bottles that day of this Zweigelt because he couldn't think of anything else he wanted to do but sit around with a great chef, eat pizza and talk wine and just be in a comfortable environment. And he said, this is the unsung grape that everyone should be drinking. You need to work it into your repertoire no matter what you are as a red wine drinker because it can offer you so much. And compared to how everyone went crazy for Pinot Noir prices since the movie Sideways came out, this can give you that layering effect, but with just a lot more spice and a lot more character to it. So cheers. Thanks for always importing this wine, Klaus.
You see, my glass is empty. This is just such an easy drinking red wine. You know, I mean, you know, people I know like Cabernet and like the big ass wines, but sometimes you just need an easy drinking wine, especially in the summertime. I think that's also why Pinot Noir is such a big success because it's a more elegant wine. It's something you can even put a little chill on it. And, you know, I call Zweigelt kind of the poor man's Pinot Noir because it's, it has a price point. And that, you know, I have to tell you the truth, and Tony is not listening. He probably, I never liked Tony's Zweigelt so much. And then one year I sold out of the Zweigelt and I had to bring in more Zweigelt on my fall container. And then all of a sudden I got calls from customers telling me, damn, you know, I want some more of this Zweigelt, or, you know, it's very difficult to pronounce Zweigelt because the E and the I in the German language is pronounced the opposite way. But anyway, after 5 or 6 calls, I said, damn, I have to try this wine. And I tried it and I said, shit, this is good. What's wrong? Maybe Tony made a mistake in labeling and sent me some of his Cuvée Wagram instead of the Zweigelt. So I gave him a call and I said, Tony, I really have to admit, I have to ask you, did you make a mistake in sending me the last container? And he said, no, Klaus, I've been trying to tell you, good wine takes time. You always want the young stuff right off the next vintage. But Zweigelt, if it sits in my cellar for the summer, where it's, the cellar warms up a little bit, and if I bottled this Zweigelt then in the fall, after it takes in the flavors, it's so much better. And it's actually a serious red wine and not just this very easy drinking, you know, white or red, you know. And now 2017 actually is our current vintage. So it's not that we couldn't sell this wine. We really physically now keeping this wine a little bit back. And we are actually just now, May, we released the 2018 and we're going to bring in the 2018 on our next order. So 17 is what Anton Bauer has on the Zweigelt as the current vintage. And that's for, you know, under $20 bottle of wine. Like Nick mentioned, this is the best pizza burger wine. And, you know, we have this, this is my Wednesday night, Thursday night, easy wine. And the great thing is also with the screw tap, if you don't finish it, put the screw cap back on. And if you still forget about it, it's great wine to put in your sauce too. It just works a lot of different avenues. So I love Zweigelt. You see the you know, quite a few grapes on the vines here. This was our harvest last year, 2020. And we harvested the Zweigelt grape on September 30th. So Anton actually also waits even on the Zweigelt a little bit longer than many other people harvested Zweigelt much, much earlier. But it's all about the leaf, the management, and trying to keep them healthy and then having the perfect physiological ripeness to bring into his Stella. One of the things what made Anton really big in Austria is some of these little, you know, bottles for two. That's the 3-liter bottle here and 6-liter bottles. And then he even goes up to like 18 and 24 liter bottles. And when Tony, like I mentioned before, from the Wagram, the Cuvée, and especially the Reserve, a blend of Austrian grapes in the red, which actually tastes quite complex and big. And then, like I mentioned, Austrians like to drink Austrian wines. And when Tony started to work, his business focused not so much going to Vienna. Even so, Vienna is the closest big city. Tony actually decided to go west, more to the ski resorts, to Salzburg and then Tyrol and Vorarlberg on the Adelberg, where I actually used to work at the Adelberg Hospiz. And there in those big hotels, you know, people check in Europe, they go on vacation for a week to 2 weeks. And the first day they check in, it's like a ship. And you stay in this one place for a week and you have the same table, the same waiter. And the first night you order one of those big bottles. And you know, all of a sudden the next second night, some of the neighboring tables or people in the hotel come and visit you and you become, and that's what Tony realized, you know, that's why he became a big red wine producer in Austria. And what got me really going with Anton is his Pinot Noirs. Like I mentioned, I worked at L'Auberge François, and it was always a difficult thing for me to find great Pinot Noirs in the Barrique Glass everyday development. And when I started to taste Anton's Pinot Noir, it popped. So the next wine is our classic Pinot Noir, we call the Wagram Pinot Noir. This is actually a vineyard. Here's the cellar. And right down here, we have a vineyard in the flat area. And that's where Tony actually planted some of German Blauburgunder clones mixed with some French clones. So the color is typical Pinot Noir. It's not dark. When Pinot Noir gets too dark in color, there's something else blended into it because Pinot has a very thin skin and Pinot Noir never gives a lot of color. So this is what I like about Tony's Pinot Noir. It's just pure, it's that cherry. And again, now our wines are starting to get quite old here and not too high. I mean, we're having a little bit problem with climate change with the Pinot Noir, and we actually just started to a new vineyard over on the next village where we have actually a more northeast facing vineyard closer to the forest where we can get cooler grapes for the Pinot Noir, because that vineyard, number one, we have problems sometimes with the frost, like 2016 vintage almost was completely wiped out. And now we are taking this Wagram Pinot Noir actually from two different vineyards. And this is the first vintage where we actually blended a little bit of the new vineyard into it, and it gives it some nice brightness and freshness. 12 months in the bigger barrels, but also a lot of the stainless steel, but usually he likes to put it in the used barrels, the ones he used for his big red wines before the third and the fourth year, to give that Pinot Noir a little bit of the air oxidation contact. Pinot Noir is nothing new in Austria. When I was a little boy in the 11th century, you know, the Sistinian monks were quite one of the reasons why we have wine growing in Europe is the monks, because of course they were literate, they had books, they were writing down, and you know, in Burgundy, and they had a sister monastery in Austria in south of Vienna. And they brought the grapes over from Burgundy because it's the same latitude and the soil was very similar, because we also have the chalk and all the different kind of components. And the monks realized that this is also an area. So we actually brought Chardonnay and Pinot Blanc and Pinot Noir. And actually, you know, before the World War and during these times, there was no Grüner Veltliner and Riesling. It was all the Burgundian grapes in Austria. And when Tony was only 15 years old and going to the school in Krems, he had a French teacher, and he did a summer, a little class, and the teacher took him to Burgundy. And he actually went to this nice little estate of Clos de Vougeot, and he got the Pinot bug there. And ever since, he's been coming back to Feuersbrunn and kind of thinking that Pinot does quite well in that region. And that's really, I can just agree with him. This is just a beautiful, you know, again, under $20 type of Pinot Noir, which you don't really find in too many places. So the Pinot Noir right here, hand harvested, single berry selection, 5 gram acidity. It's fresh, elegant. How do you like it, Nick?
Can we 18. Just maybe expand on that? Because I feel like you're burying a little bit of the lead here. He's 15 years old, going to Hospice de Beaune, correct? Where his introduction into Burgundy and Pinot Noir is. So imagine, you know, that you have access to a winery and you're seeing this in conjunction with your story about selling the barrels for thousands of dollars, not to mention it's your nanny / teacher / au pair.
Other boys at 15 years in Austria would look for the girls and Tony looked for the barrels. That's why he's still single. That's why he's still not married.
I can't think of a more impressive way to get bitten by the Pinot Noir bug than his story, let alone to see that that is what he's comparing everybody's efforts to. You can see that physically in every single glass of wine, how he knows what Pinot Noir is supposed to be like. And I think that's what happened to so many other people when they try to tackle this grape. The queen has a reputation of being the queen because she wants to be treated in a certain way. And so for his whole entire life, knowing what Pinot Noir is supposed to taste like, and then being able to translate to the glass, except at a far more ridiculously accessible way than most Burgundy is one of the best things about Anton's wines. I mean, this Pinot Noir, much like this Weigelt, you can't compare it to anybody else's as far as price. It devastates everyone else.
It's such a satisfying wine. You know, it's light, but yet still it has a long aftertaste. It still stays on your palate for a long time. It's right there. It's not that Coca-Cola sweet Pinot Noir, which you usually get in this price point. It's and Burgundy in this price point usually gets a little bit leaner because all the good fruit goes into their cruise, so they cannot keep anything back. So here you have kind of the, again, harmony. And that's what comes to me always. It's the harmony in the wine. It has to speak to me. And this glass, every sip from the beginning to the end kind of speaks. And I know I'm going way late here again, like always. Let's go to the reserve. Pinot Noir, I just broke my last Burgundy glass. So Tony, I'm sorry, I'm tasting this from a Bordeaux glass. I have to go and get some Salto Burgundy glasses. That's my next purchase I have to do. But this is Tony's reserve Pinot. This is the first vineyard he planted when he came back from France, when he was only 16 years old. And he used the 777, the 115, the 2013, and the M1, all the French clones, the Pommard. And this now going to the real Burgundian, 20 months in new French oak. It's a baby. 2017 is our current release on this wine. It's just, you know, we are kind of butchering it right now by opening it, because I really wish we could taste this wine in 10 years. So, you know, buy a 6-pack, open one, and then every year open another bottle. And then maybe you should have bought 2 6-packs, because after 7 years, you wish you would have had more. So anyway, this is just, you know, it has a little oxidation again. So it's, and then now when you look at the legs, this wine is much more concentrated. It's looks for food. Of course, you have to have like a little duck or something with it, or mushrooms. I love Pinot Noir and mushrooms. And it is just totally amazing reserve Pinot Noir. And I never forget 2012 vintage. So it probably was in 2014 or 15. I opened up my computer one time in the morning, and there was a note from the wine enthusiast. Congratulations, your wine received 96 points. And I like right away closed the computer because I thought somebody was sending me a virus. So I got on the phone, and Anton just got the same email as I got. And we looked at it, and that's when Anne Krapel from The Wine Enthusiast gave Anton's 2012 Pinot Noir, at that time, the highest rating for an Austrian red wine. And it was really amazing. And I think I have one or two bottles left of the 12th, and the wine is just magnificent right now. So that's when Anton Bauer, you know, really focusing, you know, you see a lot of barriques, which you don't see that many in other wineries in this part of Austria. And here you have the 2000, the current release. And I do have to bring in one more wine, even so we don't taste it. But you know, my wife is an artist. And 1 year in 2011, I got Anton Bauer drunk enough to convince him that to put one of my wife's, first of all, I had to convince him, because whenever we tasted through all his barrels, the Blaufränkisch was just sticking out. And I know the Wagram is not a Blaufränkisch area, or people think it's not a Blaufränkisch area, but the wines I tasted from Anton were just magnificent. So I convinced Tony in 2011 to take actually four barrels and just bottle it by itself and put my wife's label on there and call it the Artist Series. 2012, we made six barrels, and then 13, we grew a little bit further. And then the 2017 vintage, which is the current release, which is about to arrive. This is a picture in December, when I got another email from the wine enthusiast telling me that this wine just received 97 points. And I was never a really point guy, but of course, when you get high scores, you can brag a little bit. But anyway, it goes back to Anton Bauer. Every wine is one of his children, and it's really in the vineyard. That's where the wines are made. It's always hand harvested, hand picked. I was actually there. He tried a machine harvest one time for 20 minutes, and then he threw them out and said, go away, get out of my vineyards. And Anton, this is one of his oldest workers who used to work for his father and his wife, Mr. Zangal. He still works with him every day in the vineyard during harvest. Anton also, oops, I went too quick here, loves gardening. This is our tasting room. So if you ever go to Austria, let me know, and I'll try to set you up a little tasting with Anton. This is the office, and he loves gardening. And if you go to the cellar, it's always that spotless. If you drop something and you pick it up, you don't sink a second time and you can eat it. It's really, really clean and spotless. And that's what it's all about. If you go to Feuersbrunn, there's also a great restaurant and hotel, the Mörwald. So here is Gudrun, Tony's better half, who sometimes has to knock in some sense into him. But here we are at a dinner at this beautiful restaurant, Mörwald. And they also have a Relais Chateau there now. And it's one of the best beds you ever sleep in. So if you go to Feuersbrunn, the first day, I allow you to sleep in, because it's just amazing. And here's Tony and me. Taking in a beer after a big wine tasting, you know, that's always important. A good winemaker likes to drink a good beer after tasting a lot of wines. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to show you some of the Anton Bauer wines. I actually will be back with some Karl Steininger tomorrow, and we're talking a little bit about Sekt production. And then Martin Mittelbach is coming on Wednesday. We're talking about the Wachau, the oldest winery on that side of the Danube. And there's some incredible wines from Martin Mittelbach we're going to be tasting or talking about with Martin. And next week, I have Leo Hillinger and a few other wineries coming on. So thank you, Antoinette, for giving me this opportunity. I'm going to stop my slideshow. Here's Leo's top cuvée, and we're actually going to be tasting two vintages of this Hill One. And I can't wait to actually talk a little bit more about that next week.
And Klaus, before we go, we do have a question in the Q&A.
Yes, we do have that. I'm just going to shut off my little presentation here. and bring us beautiful faces in here. And if anybody has any questions, I had a few glasses. I can answer them now.
Well, you should be prime then. One of the questions that was posed, aside from everyone wanting to go on Antoinette's helicopter, was what do you personally, Klaus, consider some of the better areas for growing Blaufränkisch? Because you had mentioned that the Wagram, you know, it kind of stood out from everything else that Tony was doing. So this leads in perfectly to some of our upcoming presentations that you're going to be around. Where do you like Blaufränkisch from? Or maybe even whose Blaufränkisch do you enjoy?
Well, Hungary makes a good Blaufränkisch. I know I went with Leo Hillinger in his house in Hungary one time, and he showed me some of the unbelievable Blaufränkisch from Hungary. And then where Leo is located on the Leiterberg is actually one of the best areas for Blaufränkisch in Austria. Heinrich and some of the top producers, Prela, all these, and then going down the Rust, Triebama. The Leiterberg is kind of the end of the Alps, and it's the chalk and the schist, and that's where Blaufränkisch is at home. But then we also have the Mittelburgenland, which is the central Burgenland, which was the first DAC for Blaufränkisch. I actually have a producer, which I searched out many years ago, Heribert Bayer, who actually has a cellar, and he ages old Blaufränkisch. So actually I have access to 2001 and 2002 and older Blaufränkisch, which when I first tried to introduce them, I think I was a little bit too early. It's some of my things, sometimes my head, people were just not ready for older Blaufränkisch when I started to bring it in. But I think now we are primed for that. So we're going to start to introduce some of these Mittelburgenland from Heribert Bayer, Moritz. Moritz is another big name for Austrian wine. And actually, I had the opportunity, Anton Bauer introduced me to Fehlich and to Moritz 20 years ago. And I said I couldn't sell them. Stupid was I. Now he's the top wine, but you know, you can't do it all. But I have Steindorfer, which works for Alois Kracher. But then also down in the southern part of Burgenland, Eisenberg is another DAC for Blaufränkisch, where I have one of the young and upcoming Austrian winemakers for Blaufränkisch, Jalitz. And those are like Piedmont. Those are like they're not everybody's cup of tea. Those like Barolo, you know, not everybody likes Barolo. I'd be the first one to tell you there's so many bad Barolos, but when you taste a really good one, whoosh, wow. And that's a little bit like Eisenberg. This is just iron. This is minerality. This is Blaufränkisch with every sip tastes different. Anton's Blaufränkisch is a bit more like the Mittelburgenland. It's warmer soil. It's luscious. It almost, the Blaufränkisch has a little bit of Rhone, Syrah influence with a little Pinot Noir stripes in there. And that's what you get on the Leiterberg too. So Blaufränkisch is really what's happening. People drink white wine and Grüner Veltliner is what we make the most. Riesling is my personal favorite. So Antoinette, maybe one day you bring me back for just Riesling. We do some of the best Rieslings from Austria. You see me smiling all the way through. Blaufränkisch is great too. And then we can do single vineyard Grüner Veltliners too. I mean, there's so many great single vineyard Grüner Veltliners coming out now. It's amazing. So
we can try that for Austrian Wine Month next year.
I think it was quite successful. Not many people have taken it to this extreme as Antoinette did. And it's just amazing what you put together. And I'm so excited to be part of that. Thank you.
Well, thank you both so much. Klaus, that was an incredible presentation and a wonderful introduction to the winery. Do you have any final thoughts to share before we say goodnight?
Drink Austrian wine. Drink more Austrian wine so I can retire and spend a little bit more time in Austria. Or you can come and visit me in Austria and I'll take you around to all these magnificent, beautiful wineries we have. And the great thing about Austria, it's a short plane ride when we start traveling again, but Austrian Airlines flies direct from Dallas to Vienna. And what's so unique about Austria is Vienna is the capital city, And within 1 hour surrounding the capital city, you can visit most of the wineries you've been tasting for these 2 and 3 weeks with Antoinette. So you can actually stay in Vienna and then go out every day and visit a different winery and still be in a beautiful city with Vienna, of course, you know, great restaurants, great history, museums, music, you know, both Beethoven and Mozart both come from there. So there's so many things to do. And Austria has been voted as the top wine destination place in some of the European travel magazines. And Americans don't think of Austria and wine. It's just, you know, we are 1%, 1% of the world wine production. So, so please drink Austrian wine. Preferably look at the back, and if you see KW Selection on the back, then you're drinking the real good stuff.
I'll go one little further, because you're always overly modest, Klaus, about how delicious your wines are. And I think if you have to leave with a parting thought, aside from learn about how good Anton Bauer is at treating Pinot Noir the way it's supposed to be, I think the other thing is to actually sit down and try to taste through all of Anton's Grüners side by side and just see how much range this grape has and how this one man is able to pull out and do things that you just wouldn't think are possible with the same grape to get such a varied profile. But between the Gemurk, even his regular little Wagram that we used to be able to get in, the Rosenberg and the Grüner Veltliner Grand Reserve, when you see just those three pillars of Grüner, it changes your impression of Grüner Veltliner, and it changes to be able to see something that rivals the best of Alsace and Germany morph into something that is on equal footing with some of the best Burgundy wines. It's stunning to see that and to be able to capture that just in one producer and just in three bottles. So that would be my parting words. But Antoinette, as always, thank you so much for being our gracious host. Klaus, I can't thank you enough for bringing these wines in and introducing me to them and being my Sherpa into the world of Austrian wine. But I look forward to many, many more days of this. Cheers.
Excellent. Cheers. Well, thank you for joining us today, Nick and Klaus. We appreciate everyone's interest in the great wines of Austria. And we encourage you to visit our website calendar at corkandfork.co to view the upcoming Austrian wine events with some of the region's greatest producers, such as Anton Bauer. And Klaus, I look forward to spending some more time with you in the upcoming seminars. And Nick, hope to see you again. I'm going to end the meeting for all, wishing everyone a wonderful evening, and we'll see you soon. Good night.
Good night. Good night.